The speech preceding the one you're about to hear was by Dr. Gryc, G-R-Y-C, on geological effects of the Alaska earthquake. This speech is currently with Dr. Andreessen. Dr. Andreessen, in the Geology Department.
Precise reading at that time?
0.8.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Do you have information on the time duration of the earthquake?
Would you,
time duration? What do you mean by the time duration? The
build-up time, the fall time, the way it falls, the movement, the way it moves. I wondered whether you had any kind of the period
of the fall. I don't know about that one, Art. Can you help me out on that? These are all eyewitness reports we have, so they're be just estimates.
Any other questions? Thank you very much. Yes. Oh.
Apparently sessions 3 and 4 are being held in Bunnell Auditorium. They are not listed. The place where they are being held is not listed in the program. 3 and 4 in Bunnell Auditorium. I have another announcement. Dr. Terrace Moore, will you get in touch with Dr. Wood at your convenience? Also, Mr. Warren George and Mr. Shame, would you see Dr. Andreessen at the entrance of the hall during the coffee break, which we'll have just after the next speaker, Mr. Dobrovolny's speech or talk. Dr. Schmidt has worked with the U.S. Geological Survey in Alaska for a large number of years. She's now teaching at Community College in Anchorage. She acted as chief of the Engineering Geology Evaluation Group during the earthquake, particularly in the Anchorage area. Her talk, the title of her talk, Earthquake Triggered Landslides in the Anchorage Area. Dr. Schmidt.
As soon as we get the... Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Thank you. Thank you. At the time, 5:36 p.m. in the late afternoon of Friday, 27 March, the city of Anchorage was struck by a major earthquake originating in the Prince William Sound area. And I've lost my... We have the lights out, please. There we go. As the city rolled in the strong shock waves, unstable surface areas were triggered into disastrous landslides, which destroyed portions of the Bluff downtown and in the Turnagain residential area. In Turnagain, huge segments of land and expensive houses were completely devastated, and in the adjoining area, closely spaced fissures created severe structural damage to homes and further weakened and unstabilized the ground. In the downtown portion of Anchorage, A exposed several zones of subsurface weakness which gave way in earth slides. Buildings were torn apart and in many places sank below the level of the street to depths as much as 15 feet. Outside of the slide areas, earth movement during the earthquake accounted for a great amount of damage to many structures and anchorage. The duration of the severe ground roll is believed to be the cause of most of the structural failures in these non-slide areas. This report is concerned primarily with the engineering geology of landslides in the Anchorage area. May I have the other slide, please? The geology of the greater Anchorage area is described in detail by Miller and Dobrovolny in the U.S. Geological Survey Bulletin, the now famous bulletin, published in 1959. Very briefly, the Anchorage area is underlain by different types of quaternary glacial, fluvial, and estuarine deposits overlying tertiary and Mesozoic bedrock. The geologic map shows the distribution of the different Pleistocene glacial deposits. Pertinent to this problem are QO, which is the beige-colored Naptown outwash, a layered silt, sand, and gravel, which overlies the Bootleg Cove clay, which is a bright green pattern on the map. This is a light gray silty clay, the so-called blue clay, which is seen along bluffs and in the Anchorage, along the bluffs and in the Campbell Lake area and along Fish Creek. On the detailed map here, I'd like to call your attention to a cross-hatched pattern along the bluffs, which indicates areas that were covered by landslides, slumps, and flows. Five major landslides resulting from the recent earthquake occurred along these bluff areas where the clay is overlain by the Naptown outwash. This clay has sensitive zones which have undergone disturbance as a result of vibrations caused by the earthquake. The following descriptions of the landslide areas are related to surface features caused by the earthquake-triggered landslides, the laboratory results of samples taken from the newly found scarps in the landslide areas, and results available from initial drill holes. The subsurface geology is based upon face logs and samples of the landslide scarps, some pre-earthquake and post-earthquake borings and post-earthquake drill holes of the landslides to April 30th, 1964. The Bootlegger Cove clay underlies a large portion of the greater Anchorage area, and this can be seen illustrated on some of the diagrams against the wall, which you can look at later. There's a fence diagram, the second one, for example. The clay is not consistent in composition, and it varies from a clay to a silt with many lenses of coarser grain material. X-ray analyses of samples taken in 1949 by the U.S. Geological Survey show the clay fraction to be montmorillonite and chlorite montmorillonite types. Samples of the Bootlegger Cove clay taken from exposures along the landslide scarps were tested by Arctic Alaska Testing Laboratories and the Anchorage District Materials Laboratory of the Alaska Department of Highways to determine the natural moisture content and adiberg limits. An indication of strength and sensitivity was gained by pocket penetrometer tests on remolded samples. Logs from the drill holes and laboratory test results of the soil samples were used to prepare cross-sections of the 4th Avenue and L Street slides. The information on weak zones is based on standard penetrometer blow count, logs of the holes, and the available laboratory results. The greater Anchorage area was mapped on a scale of 1 inch equals 500 feet on city base maps for any and all displacements resulting from the earthquake, and on a scale of 1 inch to 100 feet in the major landslide areas. Field mapping was correlated with aerial photographs flown 3 days after the earthquake at approximately the 1 to 500 scale. This work was subsidized by the Alaska State Housing Authority, the City of Anchorage, who supplied base maps, and several petroleum companies and government agencies who supplied personnel and equipment. In the greater Anchorage area, cracks and minor displacements were reported throughout the area, and they are plotted on a map, a 1 to 24,000 scale map, which is you can see later. See if the pointer works here. No. Another line, which is on the wall. These features appear to be directly related to topography and surface conditions. Slumping occurs along hillsides and breaks and slopes. Cracks have appeared at breaks and slope in fill, as well as along and above sewer lines, culvert road crossings, and at borders of swampy areas. Well-drained level areas had no noticeable tension cracks. The Mountain View area, which is right about there, you can see. The Mountain View area on the south side of Ship Creek had no fractures noted immediately after the earthquake, and it was carefully reinvestigated the last week in April, and still no cracks or fractures showed up. Apparently, the Bootlegger Cove clay is at least 10 feet below the surface of the Ship Creek floodplain here, and the Mountain View community is built on well-drained sand and gravel outwash, which is probably the reason why there was no slumping or fracturing in the area. At the time of the earthquake, pressure ridges in ice formed around most of the lakes. They are not shown. They were not permanent features. Dams on two lakes were breached. Water level in Sand Lake dropped 2 to 3 feet, and minor changes in other lakes were reported. Several small slides occurred along the steep bluff from Point Campbell southeastward. The most damaging slides were in the vicinity of Rabbit Creek and DeArmon Road. This area has a history of landslides. In 1954, the Alaska Railroad lost track here because of slides and fill, and the present slides displaced the tracks as much as 50 feet. Houses were near the bluff, not only lost frontage, but they were tilted and foundations damaged. The slides slipped on silty sand underlying ground moraine. The silt flowed under the frozen ground. Farther north along the bluff, slumping took place in this area. There was 4 to 10 feet of horizontal displacement and 5 to 20 feet of vertical displacement. Frozen silt and silty sand containing vegetation slipped on dry, frozen silty sand. In the Point Campbell area, there were several slumps and small landslides in the dune sand, and one slide went down into the arm. Some fractures were observed along the crest of dunes. Although landslides and slumps have previously occurred along the south side of Chester Creek, which is underlain by the clay, there were no major slides generated by the earthquake in this area. In the city dock area, slumping occurred along the bluff. The city dock area would be right about there. And numerous cracks formed on the flats between the foot of the bluff and the shoreline. A small slide with maximum horizontal displacement of 1.5 feet developed in the bluff area. At least 2 small pressure ridges were formed along the toe of this slide. The flats are covered with an estuarine silt similar in appearance to the Bootlegger Cove clay. The cracks probably reflect the severe shaking to which this unconsolidated material was subjected. In the downtown area, there were 5 major slides. They are similar in that these slides are the L Street slide, the 4th Avenue slide, the one in the center, then the small one on this side is the 1st Avenue slide, and up here the south facing one is the Government Hill slide. These slides are similar in that they exhibit the large arcuate or pull away or tension troughs along the head of the slide blocks and compressional pressure ridges at the toe of the slide. This is the toe. These are the heads of the slide. The magnitude of destruction to buildings in the collapsed blocks is directly proportional to the amount of downdropping, which is greatest at the point of maximum penetration at the head of the slide. Vertical displacement decreases irregularly in magnitude away from this point, finally dissipating into a splayed-out pattern of tension cracks that mark the margins of the slides. The pull-away trough at the head of the slide is not a simple down-drop block. Thank you. But rather consists of a number of highly fractured, elongate slivers that have collapsed to form a relatively broad trough of subsidence, as shown in the Government Hill slide here. The compressional pressure ridges along the toe of the slides have compensated for the lateral movement at the head of the slide. These pressure ridges have uplifted and buckled buildings in a destructive but more limited and less spectacular pattern, as seen in this house at the toe of the L Street slide. This is the areas between the pull-away cracks at the top of the slide blocks and the pressure ridges at the bottom of the blocks are generally undisturbed. The buildings and ground in this area between the slides and the ridges did not shift differentially but moved essentially laterally as a unit. The slide blocks cannot now be considered entirely stable but rather in a state of balance. Overloading the head of the slide blocks, a removal of the stabilizing features near the toe of the blocks could unbalance the present state of equilibrium and possibly result in more movement. The small arcuate, this is the First Avenue slide, and the northeast corner of the bluff has a the northeast corner here. Down dropped the bluff in which the Alaska Native Hospital is located. This slide is approximately 700 feet long with a pull-away trough approximately 25 feet deep. One sharp pressure ridge as high as 10 feet marks the toe of the slide. The Government Hill slide is the only large slide in the Anchorage area on a south-facing bluff. A complex pull-away trough, this is the slide up in that corner there. More gadgets here than I know what to do. A complex pull-away trough as deep as 25 feet marks the head of the Government Hill slide. Large blocks within the entire slide area, although displaced as much as 25 feet in a southerly direction, appear to have suffered no vertical movement. The toe of the Government Hill slide developed into a flow and advanced much farther than necessary to compensate for the lateral movement at its head. All compressional features at the base of the slide, if they ever existed, were destroyed by the flow. The Bootlegger Cove clay exposed in the bluff here is overlain by 25 feet of bedded sand and gravel. Landslides have occurred in this area in the past. The head of the L Street slide, which is shown both in a map and in an aerial photograph, begins as a series of intricate cracks on Bootlegger Cove Drive, extends across the park strip, and then trends northerly to 3rd Avenue in this area, where it splays out. The pull-away trough averages, this is the trough right in through here, and again, you can see it here, about 250 feet in width and exhibits a maximum vertical displacement of 7 to 10 feet. Compressional ridges along the toe of the slide are as much as 7 feet high and show 11 feet of overthrust east-west over the east block over the west block. The first few slides are illustrations of the pull-away trough at the head of the slide. This is a car resting unhappily in the graben. And these are some of the pressure ridges or compressional ridges at the toe of the slide. The surveys by city engineers also show that the maximum lateral or horizontal movement of the slide was approximately 11 feet. However, from their surveys, only about 80% of the horizontal movement can be accounted for by compression across the pressure ridges. There is a diagram on the wall which shows the elongation and compression of the different city blocks. Evidently, the remaining horizontal movement is taken up beyond the pressure ridge zone at the base of the Alaska Railroad bed. The pressure ridges and the Alaska Railroad bed are believed to be the stabilizing features which now prevent additional movement of the slide block. A geologic cross-section of the area normal to the slide was constructed from the available laboratory results of samples taken from the drill holes and from weak zones indicated on the driller's log. The probable slippage zone indicated in yellow was near sea level on a northwest trending line, right in that direction, right about like that. The Fourth Avenue slide, although smaller than the L Street slide, appears to be somewhat more complex. On this slide, First Avenue, this is C Street here, and this is Fourth Avenue. The head of the slide starts in this direction, is more intricate here, and splays out in this direction. There are two pull-away troughs in this area. One starts within the main segment here, going in this direction, and another one in that direction. A third very weak subsidence zone developed in back of the slide along D Street in this area here. This feature apparently developed later than the two principal slides that head on 4th Avenue. Maximum subsidence measured in the pull-away trough of the main slide along 4th Avenue was 11 feet. Compressional pressure ridges at the toe of the slide occur from 3rd Avenue as far north as 4th Avenue, as 1st Avenue. Maximum horizontal movement of the slide block along C Street was approximately 14 feet. A drill normal to the slide indicated a very stable zone in the clay from an approximate elevation of 20 feet down to sea level. The Turnigan slide, a major feature almost 2 miles wide, represents a chaotic jumble of broken blocks resulting from a rapid outward and downward movement of a large, unstable mass of earth. This slide is probably a shallow slide in which the earth mass, broken loose by the seismic action of the earthquake, moved outward and broke into blocks that continued to flow out into the waters of Knick Arm until equilibrium was reached. The lateral spreading or breakage of the landmass has resulted in the jumble of individual blocks and the total destruction of homes. The release and subsequent movement of this slide block over such a great distance was in part aided by the steep Turnigan Bluff, which could not provide any compressional support for an outward thrust. This illustration was taken in October of 1959, and at that time was taken to demonstrate this landslide coming down from the block. The head of the slide extends from west, from near the mouth of Fish Creek, to north of the Anchorage International Airport. More than 200 acres of land, approximately 70 homes, were carried out by the slide. The new bluff, ranging from 10 to 30 feet in height, is now approximately 500 feet behind the old bluff Here's the old bluff you see here, and new bluff, both in the aerial mosaic and in the diagram beneath. It is approximately 500 feet behind the old bluff along the eastern part of the slide, and 1,200 feet behind the old bluff along the western part of the slide. It is noted that the head of the slide progressed farther inland in the uninhabited or west part than in the habited or eastern part. A possible explanation may be that the habited area with its storm sewer system allowed less water to enter the Bootleg Cove clay and may have helped prevent the entire area from flowing out as happened in the uninhabited area. The area behind the present new bluff in the Turnagain area is badly fractured. Some idea of the density of the fracture pattern can be seen from this map on a 1 to 100 scale. There is a copy of the map on the wall for display. The fracture pattern behind the new bluff indicates an incipient downdrop bluff, which is marked in yellow on the slide and on the diagram on the wall, and which is in this area here. This is a illustration of the crack in the Arctic Circle area in part of the downdrop bluff. During the earthquake, horizontal movement across the highly fractured area behind the slide was as much as 4 feet. Tension cracks paralleling these streets and at right angles to it are noted throughout the area, and some going beyond Northern Lights Boulevard as far south as 30th Avenue. This is how the cracks looked this July. The others were all taken within a week or two after the earthquake. Even a crack as small as this one completely destroyed foundations and basements in the Turnagain area. In West Turnagain and in Talaquana is an area which seems to be free of tension cracks. This area is drained by Hood Creek, a small stream which runs through the center of the area. Possibly the explanation for the lack of cracks here is that the area is relatively well drained. The new scarp was logged and samples of the exposed Bootlegger Cove clay were collected. The difference between the moisture content and liquid limit was less in the area of the major slide west of the Turnagain residential area. This is an area of low topography covered by an extensive swamp deposit. The peat in the swamp has the ability of holding several hundred percent moisture. The low topography combined with swampy ground and variation in drainage conditions account for the higher moisture content and probably was a contributing factor to the large slide occurring here. It is interesting to note that 2 years ago, slumps occurred farther west along the bluff, along a slip plane in the Bootlegger Cove clay, somewhat above high tide level. But this area was not disturbed by the earthquake. A similar plane in the Bootlegger Cove clay was noted among the landslide blocks, apparently at the same elevation as the earlier one to the west and in the position of the former bluff. Most of the blocks that have broken away from the slide are essentially in a horizontal position. Tilting that is seen can be readily explained by settling after lateral movement. It is thought that this slide is one of rapid lateral spreading on a slide plane within the Bootlegger Cove clay above sea level. The principal damage in the anchorage area occurred in bluff areas where major landslides were initiated by the earthquake. Listed in order of greatest aerial extent are the Turnagain slide, the L Street slide, this one, the 4th Avenue slide, first the Government Hill slide, and the 1st Avenue slide. Maximum horizontal movement of the slides was 1,200 feet in Turnagain. The maximum down-dropping was 30 feet, Government Hill and Turnagain, both. The failure within the Bootlegger Cove plain was the cause of the landslides. The failure planes occurring near sea level were weak zones in a delicate state of equilibrium. Movement generated by the earthquake destroyed the equilibrium and caused the consequent loss of the clay's shearing strength. With the exception of the bluff areas of potential conditions, the remainder of the greater anchorage area appears to be relatively stable. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bruce.
Oh, welcome, Tom.
We unfortunately don't have any time now for questions, but I'm sure that with the displays on the wall others of you can see Dr. Schmidt personally about some things that you'd like to speak to her about. We have a coffee break coming up. I have several announcements. Would Dr. Terrence Moore, if he's here, stop off at the podium on the way out? George West, Raymond Evans, Arno Callio, stop at the registration desk concerning the dinners, the banquets. And another announcement that the Medical Science and Psychiatric Symposium will be in Shivel Hall instead of the Patty Building. Now let's take a break. There are coffee and donuts in
order, please. Several announcements. First, the photographs of the anchorage area that are displayed along the bleacher wall of the gymnasium were all taken by Larry Crackle of the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, and he has kindly loaned us these photographs for display here today. Secondly, will Mr. Frank C. DeLuzio and F.V. Thorsteinson please see Mr. Dale Evans at the entrance to the gym when this particular part of Session 1 is over. And thirdly, Session 2, which is listed to begin at 1:20 this afternoon in this room, will begin at 1:20. We're running about 15 minutes late, so lunch hour is shortened by that amount, but I think we can all get back here by 1:20. With the schedule change that was announced earlier, where Ruth Schmidt and her group presented the paper before the coffee break, now the paper that was originally to be presented before the coffee break by Ernest Dobrovolny and Lydia Skelcraig will be presented. The paper will be given by Mr. Dobrovolny, who has gained fame or notoriety in connection with a report that was published in 1959 concerning the Anchorage area, in which all too accurate predictions were made concerning where damage and slumping would occur should the proper trigger mechanism be present. Mr. Dobrovolny. The title of the paper is Effects of the Good Friday Earthquake on Anchorage, Alaska and Urban Reconstruction.
I've suggested that my paper be cut out of the schedule, and as much as we're about 15 minutes late and proceed with the next one, then we'd be on schedule. Now, among others, these facts and bits of information were on hand in Anchorage on March 27 of this year. The city is located in an active seismic area. The city used the Uniform Building Code for Seismic Zone 3. There existed a documented record of recession of part of the bluff along Kinnick Arm and instability of certain Pleistocene units. The principal effects of the earthquake were shaking, triggering of landslides with associated fracturing back of the head of the landslide scarps, differential settlement, particularly an artificial fill, and compaction fracturing in grounds near as well as far removed from the landslides, subsidence, which was in part tectonic and in part compaction of surficial material. Now, by surficial material, I refer to poorly consolidated deposits that are several hundreds of feet thick in places. By far, the greatest amount of damage to buildings and service facilities was in the areas of landslides. May I have the first slide, please? The landslide locations are shown in the illustration in front of you. Dr. Schmidt has described the geology, so my comments upon the setting will be brief. Throughout the area of sliding, the surface is underlain by sand and gravel 10 to 30 feet thick. Beneath the sand and gravel is the Bootlegger Cove clay, a deposit of estuarine silt and clay more than 140 feet thick. All of the larger landslides were block glides that moved outward, essentially in a horizontal plane. Separation took place in the Bootlegger Cove clay. Effects on construction, reconstruction, and regulations applying to building were many and varied. New construction was halted. Designs were changed. Existing buildings were surveyed and some were condemned. They were no longer in a condition deemed fit for habitation. The Geological Evaluation Group, under the auspices of the Alaska State Housing Authority, conducted the first extensive survey of the effects of the earthquake on the ground conditions. This work served as a guide primarily for the city. It also served as a guide for Alaska State Housing Authority in applying for appropriations and allotment of funds for a possible renewal disaster project as aid for the reconstruction of the city. This is the first of the urban renewal maps. It bears a resemblance to the maps prepared by the Geological Evaluation Group, as indeed it should. A second planning map was released last week. I presume other such maps or variations of them may be issued at a later date as more definitive information becomes available. The problem here is that these are valuable lands. At least the price of lots is high. And they should be used in the most economical way known. But if federal funds are used, only appropriate land development plans will be acceptable. The city of Anchorage, as a formally constituted and recognized government body, requested the U.S. Army Engineer District, Corps of Engineers, Anchorage, to undertake a study of the landslide areas with the purpose of determining the mechanics of the sliding and for recommendations for control of the landslides in the event of another earthquake similar to the one that occurred on the 27th. To perform this work, the Corps of Engineers engaged Shannon and Wilson Incorporated, Seattle, who initiated an extensive drilling, geophysical, and soils investigation program. There now are very few geologic units that have been tested as thoroughly as the Bootlegger Cove clay. I have not seen all of the massive data, and I'm not sure I would know how to use all of it. In April, the Federal Reconstruction and Development Planning Commission for Alaska organized task forces to perform certain facets of work related to reconstruction and development. One of these was the Scientific and Engineering Task Force, known locally as Task Force 9. Its primary charge was to review proposed engineering investigations and conclusions related to reconstruction and make recommendations to the Commission. The task force members were drawn from the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Survey, the Corps of Engineers, and the U.S. Geological Survey. And I am one of the members of the field team of that task force. In order to provide a uniform guide for all federal lending agencies, such as Small Business Administration and Federal Housing Administration, the Scientific and Engineering Task Force was requested to prepare so-called risk maps. The first of these maps was rather simple. The legend contained only two categories. One was referred to as nominal risk. It is the uncolored part of the map. The other category is high risk. High risk pending further investigation. A criteria used in drawing the boundary between these two categories were topography and underlying geologic materials. We also used the results of the investigations conducted under the auspices of the State Housing Authority. Now, even a cursory examination of the ground condition shows that significant landsliding occurred only along fairly steep bluffs that are underlain by the Bootlegger Cove clay, where it is at least 25 feet thick along the base of the bluff. Now, some minor displacements took place along bluffs underlain by till and sand, such as along Point Campbell. But the failures here were not of the block glide type that caused so much damage in Anchorage. The precise limits of the Bootlegger Cove clay are not accurately delineated in detail on this map. When I drew this illustration, I did not have the latest information on its distribution at hand, but I think it's substantially correct. Now, the purpose of this map was to release the area classified as nominal risk for loans by the federal lending agencies. Most of the greater Anchorage area, as this map reveals, was unaffected by landslides. There is room for expansion. Most of the area is at an altitude below the 500-foot contour interval. The 500-foot contour interval is the brown line near the right-hand border of the map. Now, there are many excellent building sites between the 500 and 1,000 foot contour interval that have excellent views, and they're accessible. Now, while preparing this map, the same question was repeated many times. Why did some areas slide while others did not? Is there a difference in the composition of the clay that might account for this? Did the works of man exert an influence? Now, these questions we hope would be answered by the results of the drilling and testing program being carried on under the direction of the Corps of Engineers. This illustration is the last risk map that has been released to date. Now, when I say use the word risk map, this is in quotes. One more such map will be required before the work has been completed. Now note that the map legend has become more complicated. There are more categories and there are more words. Let me quote from the legend that described this map. Nominal risk, little likelihood of landslides except for small slumps, largely an artificial fill. In all other respects, risks are no greater than is normally expected in the construction industry. Current uniform building code for seismic zone 3 applies both to new buildings and to plans for rehabilitation of earthquake damaged structures. Special engineering consideration should be given to construction near the top, at the base, and on the steep slopes wherever the bootlegger code clay is present. It's seldom in a building code that you will find mention of a geologic unit that has to be looked for and searched out. No filling, cutting, or construction should be permitted that will steepen or increase the load on or above these slopes. Properties at bases of bluffs such as Point Campbell and Rabbit Creek areas, which was shown on the previous slide, may be subject to damage by future slump landslides even though outside the high-risk area. The next two categories, here referred to as special considerations and regrading, drainage, or buttresses required, comes under a larger heading of provisional nominal risk area. Reclassification to nominal risk in this area is contingent upon construction of properly designed stabilization. Even with stabilization, certain restrictions on land utilization must be applied. If stabilization is not affected, land will be high risk final classification. Then under special considerations, special considerations should be given to design this area. This is because differential horizontal and vertical ground displacements can be expected. Areas subject to regrading should be used only for light structures of limited dimensions, parks, and vehicle parking. Lower limit can be defined only after final design stabilization measures. Then the category here referred to as pending doubtful. This requires further study before final determination can be made as to stability. And high risk final classification. Lands considered unstable, particularly in event of future earthquakes. No economical means of stabilization known. No repair, rehabilitation, or new construction involving use of federal funds is recommended. The exact position of the line between high risk and provisional nominal risk in the Turnagain Heights area is dependent on the outcome of engineering studies of the proposed stabilization measures. Now this was the status of information when I left Anchorage in very late July. Work has, of course, continued and more information is now available. And others in the audience may have more recent information than I have and they may want to contribute this to the discussion. All right, thank you. Of this magnitude. Extensive studies were conducted in Chile following the 1960 earthquake, but they were not as of as much detail as this. Well, they were in urban areas, all right, but they didn't have the resources to throw into this. I mean, they didn't have the, not only the money, but they didn't have the complete technical know-how that's available in, to the United States.